The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Listen, John.
Yeah.
Steve Bruce has now left Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah.
And he's on his way to Newcastle.
Newcastle.
We had a chat about this last week, and we said I didn't know whether it was a great appointment because it's the same old managers that get reeled out. Sam Allardyce, the Mark Hughes, the Steve Bruce.
Well, Sam Allardyce turned it down, didn't he?
Sam Allardyce turned it down. However, I do think that the fact that he's a Newcastle fan goes in his favour. We're joined now by James Marriott, Sheffield Wednesday podcaster. Are the Sheffield Wednesday fans gutted about this, James?
I mean, I think just as kind of 3-4 days ago, that would have been the overriding emotion, would have been a real disappointment about it. I think it's turned more to kind of probably more anger than anything else now because of the way that this has played out and the news that's kind of trickled through about it sounding like this has been as much something that's been kind of courted by Steve Bruce and his team rather than or as much as from the Newcastle side. So it's been a bit of a mess. It's not really the best way of going about these things.
I would have thought it's
happened.
I would have thought you feel the same way as as Frank Lampard left them for Chelsea, didn't he?
Left Derby
for Chelsea. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, oh, ta-da, you know, I'm going to the better club now. I've been offered better things.
But there again, how has he done at Sheffield Wednesday?
Mm. Yeah, he's done all right. I mean, he joined us at a point where the club was in a little bit of a mess and we were a little bit directionless and there was, you know, quite a bit of conflict among the fan base about the right direction to go. We'd had a manager in who'd really not done a great job in the year that he'd been at the club. What Steve Bruce kind of did is came in and spoke with that real kind of, you know, cool, calm nature that he has, and he managed to kind of galvanise and unite the fan base and get everyone behind what he was doing. Made a couple of key appointments, improvements to kind of the scouting and the fitness side of the club, and seemed to be recruiting players to plug the gaps that we've got in quite an unbalanced squad that we're left with at the moment. So I think everyone kind of felt that, you know, he'd not done anything particularly incredible on the pitch, but there were the signs that we were really moving in the direction and that we got someone through the door who knew what they were doing and knew what it was going to take to move us forward. So, you know, it was more about the potential than necessarily what Steve Bruce had achieved. You know, we finished 12th in the league, which is not amazing, but in a season where, you know, we were certainly flirting with the bottom end of the table for quite a bit of it, you know, it was nice that even, you know, with a couple of games to go, we were still in with a shout of the playoffs. So there was a lot of potential there, and that's the disappointing thing. And, you know, Frank Lampard at Derby actually achieved something and, you know, goes on with I guess, the blessing of the fan base because everyone knew that was what was going to happen. You know, Steve Bruce has left us to go to a club that's an absolute mess. And,
yes.
You know, why on earth that's a more attractive proposition than Sheffield Wednesday? I think that we're struggling to understand that. You know, if it was a club in the Premier League that had got a real solid base, then fair enough. But they're favourites to get relegated next season.
Yeah.
No Newcastle fans that I've seen or spoke to actually want Steve Bruce. He's going to be starting on a real negative footing there, whereas at Wednesday he got the whole fan base behind him. So it does feel like a bit of a strange move, all things considered, in that regard, but clearly it's a move that he wanted. And, you know, with the way that we've seen him act over the last few days, I think most fans kind of go, all right, well, maybe it's a bullet dodged for us.
So listen, Brighton manager Chris Hughton, he's the bookies' favourite. It looks like he's rejected an approach from, you know, opening the door to a manager to take on a role. So the latest one is Zola. He's emerged as the new favourite,
yeah,
is that right?
Franco Zola, yeah.
Yeah, apparently so.
What do you think about that?
Not a great deal. I mean, I don't know. We've seen this before, haven't we, where a manager is very quickly linked with a job, rules himself out, and it still turns out that it's happened because actually there's a bit of contract play going on and, you know, holding out for an improved offer or something like that. I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Chris Hughton still does end up being the next Sheffield Wednesday manager. Similarly, there's a lot of names flying about at the moment. The one thing that we've got in our advantage is that we've got Lee Bullen, who's one of our coaches, who's been caretaker manager a couple of times before and done a decent job a couple of times before. So we know that in the meantime, we've kind of got, you know, an opportunity for the club to be in safe hands. The timing's terrible, 3 weeks before the start of the season, there's no doubt about that, and really is, you know, it doesn't get much worse than that timing-wise. But, you know, Lee Bullen can kind of look after things for as long as possible. We've got to get this right. There's no point in just picking the next person on the list. If Zola is genuinely the right person to continue the rebuilding project, fine. It doesn't seem like that kind of manager to me. And I think we need to look at someone that's got a bit more of a proven track record and has been to clubs that have needed a bit of work in the past and not just spend a bit of money and have a bit of a quick fix. So,
I'm sure it was the, you know, the attractiveness of going to the Premiership for Steve Bruce, surely.
I guess so.
Yeah, but you know, it's on a sliding...
Yeah, but it's still in the Premiership and he's got a chance to keep him. You know.
I think the other element to this, James, is that he's a Newcastle fan.
He's a Newcastle fan
and
as well.
And it's almost like going home to give it a go, I suppose.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I don't blame him for that, but there's right and wrong ways of going about this, and I think Steve Bruce has gone about it the wrong way, and his team have got this wrong.
Yeah, okay, well, there we are.
Listen, I hope it turns out well this season for you. I don't think you've ever recovered since that Di Canio pushed the referee over, if I'm honest.
That's the exact moment that it all started to go wrong.
That's when it went wrong. James, thanks ever so much. James Marriott there, Sheffield Wednesday podcaster. Love Sport. Listen, John, Arsenal, your favourite team. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I love
them.
Yeah.
It's all gone a bit strange at Arsenal, I must admit. It does feel a bit weird. We're just waiting for something great to happen with Arsenal, and it doesn't feel like it is, if I'm honest.
No.
We're joined now by Lee Harper, former Arsenal goalkeeper. Morning, Lee.
Morning, Lee.
Morning. Morning, guys.
Morning. Listen, Lee, just to start with, how do you feel that Dick Emery's first year winning. how do you feel that Emery's first year in charge has gone?
Well, I think, you know, you've got to allow him some transition time to get used to the league, first and foremost. I mean, he's coming from, you know, having done well in Spain with Seville and then moving on to Paris Saint-Germain. He's well regarded as a manager. He's got the experience. He's won trophies. And I think he needed a bit of time to assess the league, assess the football club, assess the players that he had, what their mentalities were like. So I think he had to be given that season. And the next bit, and the bit that we're obviously going to discuss, is he going to be given the backing to move the club forward and bring his own people in and get his own type of player and his own type of mentality and how he wants to develop the football club. And that's the topic of the day.
Yeah. Okay, listen, you see some of these mad podcasts and some of the interviews online from some of the Arsenal fans, and it has got very heated in the past few months. I've seen some of them. It's been very lively. And now the supporters of Arsenal have come together to write a letter to Stan Kroenke about the running of the club. What do you make of the owner?
Well, can I say first and foremost that I'm an Arsenal fan myself?
Yeah.
So I've actually signed that petition.
Oh, you did?
Okay.
Yeah, I have, because first and foremost, it's frustration because, you know, we left Highbury and moved to the Emirates in order to increase the revenue to be able to compete with the greats of Barcelona's, Real Madrid's, Juventus's, the revenues that Man United were bringing in. And my thoughts are that you don't hear anything from Mr. Kroenke ever. Mm. I think that's the problem, even under the time when Arsene was there, no one ever knew whether he did have the money, whether it is his stubbornness in not wanting to spend the money, because you don't ever hear from Mr. Kroenke. He doesn't comment, he doesn't state anything. He just seems like he's running Arsenal as this business vehicle. And don't get me wrong, guys, I don't seem like the club should be running to the ground because you know, we have a loss of revenue, but ultimately you're competing in a competition. Yeah. Arsenal are a fantastic football club with a rich history, whose fan base believes they should be there and thereabouts, and I do too. I believe that we should be there and thereabouts. We should be competing for these top trophies, and you know, to be competing with the likes of Man City and Liverpool at the moment, it's going to take an unbelievable amount of investment, and just the reported investment at the moment is just nowhere near going to be enough to get one top-class defender. One, they need more than one that they need, and it's so frustrating for the Arsenal fans to see us not competing.
Yeah, do you know what I was thinking, Lee? That they were such a powerful club, and then obviously when they build the great big new stadium, it's fantastic. You do think they were going to kick on. The only thing I've felt with Arsenal, correct me if I'm wrong, is that they've lacked a bit of identity in the last few years with players. You know, you've got such great history of let's say players that were embedded, you know, the Tony Adams, the Ian Wrights, players that were embedded for it, that they're known to be part of that club. When I look at Arsenal teams now in the past few years, I don't see any character. There's not a character.
Well, they just lost the one character that they had.
Aaron Ramsey. Not as much a character, but the fact is one player that's been there 11 years.
Yeah.
They've lost somebody that's part of the makeup of that club.
Yeah, I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. I've said it for years and years and years and years. The spine of the team, you go back through the great Arsenal sides, the Adamses, you know, when I made my debut in 97 and shortly after, you know, to have someone of his ilk around you.
Yeah.
But you had that, you know, throughout the team, the spine of the team, the Bergkamps, the Vieiras, your Tony Adams, you know, you just, there's not that there now.
There's not, is it?
To be, you know, they're World Cup winners, some of these players, but you know, the likes of Mesut Ozil and that should be having a bigger impact than he's having, and I'm a fan of his, but they haven't had that identity, that strength and mentality, or seem to be that player that can, you know, they seem to have been a pushover over the years.
What about the academy, though, Lee? Because I know you've got such a good academy there, and listen, we had our mate on the other week, and he's probably not your biggest fan, but we had Teddy Sheringham on the other week, and said that the core of some of these teams should be some British players that come through some of the academies, and you know that they're fans of the club, and they're part of the setup of the club, and it's lacking in a few of the teams, and I see that within Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he's absolutely right, and I think that you see at all of these top clubs. The likes of Chelsea, I think at one point they had like 25 or 30 players out on loan. Players like Loftus-Cheek, English players who are getting in the England squad are struggling to nail down a place in their team. And I think it's the same at Arsenal. I think, you know, fans want it. Managers need it because they know they're out of a job if they don't get success and they don't get in and around that championship.
Lee, I've got to stop you there because we want to ask you a question. And
we've only got 20 seconds.
So we want to ask you very, very quickly, best player that you ever played with?
Bergkamp, I would say.
Bergkamp, wow.
You know what? I thought that Bergkamp was going to come in there. Lee, sorry to cut you off, mate. Because it's only we have to go to Sky Knows. But do you know what? It's a fascinating situation. The fact that you played there and you know those players, I'd really love to talk about it a bit more. So it'd be great if we can get you back on.
Be fantastic. Thank you, Lee Harper, ex-goalkeeper for Arsenal.
We always run out of time just before we go to the news.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a bit of a nightmare. Do you know what? Because I wanted to ask him about Alan Miller, who's a great old mate of ours. He was a goalkeeper at Arsenal, and just sort of have a chat about that. But I do think it is the situation at Arsenal. There's no identity.
No.
There's no characters. There's no one in the centre of that midfield or in that team that can go, I'm going to take this team.
Well, there's a couple of top clubs in that position at the moment. United, Arsenal.
Without a doubt.
Chelsea, I would say.
And you know why?
Even Chelsea.
You know why?
Why?
Because we're not bringing enough homegrown talent.
You're absolutely adamant about that, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah, you are,
That's the core of the team.
I agree with you.
You know?
Yeah.
Get more involved.
Look on your own doorstep. That's what you got to do.
When we come back, we're going to be looking on other people's doorsteps. Love Sport. Obviously, we've been talking about the cricket and one of the greatest sporting finishes ever that I've ever witnessed.
Yes.
We're still a bit of a debate as to whether we should have
celebrated in an
open top bus. Well, just something a bit more powerful than what we did yesterday.
Well,
we're now joined by Mike Smith, former Gloucestershire and England bowler. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
Did we celebrate enough, Mike?
Well, Downing Street's not bad. It was good good to see them go there. And went to the Oval yesterday. I think the last time, wasn't it the Ashes 2005, the open top bus? Got a bit of bad publicity, didn't it, with the way the guys were at the end of it.
But do you know what, Mike? That showed a bit of character. You know, they'd had maybe had a drink and they were celebrating. That's what we want to see, surely. Yeah. We don't want to be prim and proper, and we want to see a little bit of life in us. And I don't think we did enough yesterday.
Well, if you can't celebrate that, I mean, what can you celebrate?
Exactly. Exactly.
What a fantastic game that was.
It was a fantastic game.
Just tell us where... I mean, look, the strange thing is, Mike, the average cricket fan or the average sport fan will know certain parts of the rules, but we didn't. That rule at the end where he's slid in, Ben Stokes has slid in and it's hit his bat and gone out for a four. I mean, have you ever seen that before?
No, I haven't seen one like that. I mean, obviously, for that to happen, it is an absolute one in a million. I mean, I've seen the ball come in, I've seen it hit the batter, I've seen it hit the stumps and goes for four. I've seen it stop dead. I've seen it go to a fielder. But for it to come in such a long distance, hit the bat and then go for, in a gap, go for four was absolutely astonishing. And I don't think, I was watching it on TV and I don't think anybody picked up quickly that there'd been perhaps an extra run given where there shouldn't have been. It was only after the event. But it was an absolute one in a million. I mean, there were several kind of freakish things going on there, weren't there?
Yeah.
Trent Bolt's catch, he took a very similar one in the group game against the West Indies, didn't he, when he was very close to the boundary. He didn't step on the boundary cushion then.
Yeah.
He's got one of the safest pairs of hands in the game. And you could see Martin Guptill just shouting at him. On the replay, you could see him shouting, throw it back.
Yeah.
But the noise must have put him off and he didn't.
There was so many elements, wasn't there, that, with a couple of the opening bowls that sort of, nearly come off his bat and hit the stumps and then him dropping the catch, the bowler dropping the catch, that one you just mentioned. There's so many. It was almost like it was against them anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, somebody at work said yesterday it was kind of written in the stars that England won't win. And I think, to be fair, we were probably the best. We're the best team in the tournament overall. We had a bit of a wobble in the middle, but I think we're probably the best team in the tournament. But if you were New Zealand, you'd be a bit gutted, wouldn't you, that you lost that. Yeah. Several freakish things that you probably, are so rare as to probably never see again. I mean, what a performance they put up throughout the whole tournament.
They did.
And to be fair to New Zealand, they didn't make a meal of the ricochet off Stokes's bat or... the DRS that went against them early on as well, or Trent Bolt's catch. I mean, Williamson is an absolute giant of a man. He's absolutely unbelievable. We had him at Gloucestershire before he was famous, really. John Bracewell brought him over and said, this lad is going to be special. He's not at the moment because he was about 19 at the time. But he is going to be special, and how right he was. He just turned out to be a fantastic man and a fantastic cricketer.
What do you think about New Zealand coach Gary Steed has come out and said sharing the trophy should have been considered? It would have been a tough one, wouldn't it, to go out and... It's almost like Tyson Fury, that fight finishing a tie. We don't want a tie, do we?
No, I don't think we do want the tie. I think perhaps what I would have preferred, rather than that more boundary rule, is another super over.
Yes, I thought the same.
Yeah, until you get a result, I think that's probably a better idea. I think it's better for the crowd. At least you do get a proper winner on the day, albeit via cricket's equivalent of a penalty shootout. And you could have a different bowler, couldn't you? You could have, Jofra Archer and Trent Bolt wouldn't be allowed to bowl that over. Somebody else has got to bowl it. And I think, the chances of another tie and another super over are pretty small. So I think that would have been a better way to have decided it.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Listen, attention now turns to the upcoming tests. I mean, how do you think England's going to approach it?
Well, I think they can go in with a lot of confidence. you know, the Australians are a lot stronger this year than they were last year. They've got Warner back and they've got Steve Smith back. They've got some serious pace in their bowling. But so have we. I think it is going to be the clash of the Titans. I'd love to see Jofra Archer playing a part. He was fantastic throughout the World Cup. So I hope he gets a go. We've got good spin options with Rashid and Moeen Ali. So yeah, I mean that's always been Australia's weakness a little bit, playing against spin, and it is a bit later in the year, so the wickets will be a bit drier, which might help the spinners. But yeah, it's this World Cup has really got the interest going for the Ashes, and it's only 2 weeks away, isn't it?
Two weeks away. Wow. Yeah.
Mike, before we go, just got to ask you this: we got this World War II codebreaker, Alan Turing, has been revealed as the face of the new £50 banknote. I'm just wondering if it was going to be a cricketer.
Who would it be?
What cricketer would you have on the 50?
Ben Stokes. I think
Ben Stokes.
Wow, Ben Stokes, a new boy. Yeah. You'd have the new boy on there.
You know, I sat on his disciplinary panel back in December last year. I'm on that panel, and I just saw that he'd had enough of all that, all the drama, and he just wanted to get on with his cricket.
Right.
And we allowed him to do so. I'm very pleased that we did. He's come through that brilliantly, and that knock in the final was absolutely amazing in the circumstances, and I think if anybody deserves it from a cricketing point of view, it's Ben Stokes.
Certainly. All right, Mike, we're going to put Ben Stokes down. We're going to send it up there to the Royal Mint and say, can we get Ben Stokes on a 50?
Maybe have a £25 note or something.
There,
like
come out of a new one. You're right, Mike. Listen, have a wonderful week and enjoy. Enjoy the fact that we've won the World Cup. Mike Smith there, former Gloucestershire and England bowler. Ben Stokes, obviously. I mean, I said yesterday about Root and Jos Buttler, the fact that he threw, you know, if he doesn't throw that throw at the wicketkeeper catches it and stumps him out, we don't win the World Cup. And Ben Stokes is forgotten, if you like. So I think they're as important as Ben Stokes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ben Stokes was fantastic. But what you got, Johnny Sperling?
Well, about this, look, not actually funny, but it is quite a good one. A university dropout from Essex. I like that, dropout. Yeah. University dropout from Essex has won more than $1.5 million, that's 1.2 million quid, in the final of the world's most prestigious poker tournament. Nick Marchington, 21. Was in with a chance of becoming the youngest person to win the competition before he was knocked out on Sunday. Now, he was competing for the top prize. That's $10 million, 8 million quid. Before he was eliminated in Las Vegas, he came seventh, right?
That's seventh.
He means he walked away still with
525,000
quid. Yeah, I mean, I know somebody.
I know somebody who played in that tournament.
Wow.
I know somebody who went over.
Seventh!
Yeah. And it is hard, and it take, you know, there's thousands going for these tournaments in Vegas.
21 years old.
It's amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And we know a couple of poker players.
It's lovely.
Tony's a great poker player. Tony Cascarino.
Tony Cascarino.
Very
good. Yeah.
They
earn their money in it, right?
Without a
doubt.
That's
what they do.
It is a proper mental battle.
Yes.
You know? And
what do you do to be good at it? I mean, it's a game of chance.
Do you know
what
I think? It's a game of chance. It's a game of bluff.
Poker face, of course.
It's a game.
Game of bluff.
It's a game of nerve.
It is a game of nerve. I'll never forget. I was playing poker with some friends. Yeah, I'm going back 25, 30 years.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't know. Go on.
I go back 30 years ago. Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
I was about 24, 25, something like that.
Yeah, good.
23, sorry. Yeah. And anyway, so we're playing this game. All having a bit, you know, we're having a drink. It's after hours in the pub. And I'll never forget his name, Danny something. And
You just forgot it.
No, I haven't.
You just said, I'll never forget his name, Danny something.
It was Danny. Yeah. Anyway, he was going to, like, really, I didn't know how to play poker.
No.
I just learned that night.
Still don't.
So anyway, he had this hand. And I had a good hand. I knew I had a good hand. Mm. and I had about £3 on me. And but he's putting in like, come on, so I'm asking everyone around me
to give you the money,
see what hand I've got. Right. Okay, they go, go on, I'll give.
We're back here.
We're back here. And he's took me.
Yeah.
He knows that I've got, but he's trying to take me.
Yeah.
And it got to about £200.
Yeah.
Sweat it.
A lot of money. Yeah.
But Danny was so cocky. Mm. With that, let me see you then. And I won it.
Did you?
I won the £200.
What'd you do?
Is that the dump up? Hey? Oh, I don't know what I did with it. But I was jumping around the room with me and my mates.
It's a bit like
it was incredible.
It's a bit like the Del Boy and the Boycey sketch.
Ah, it's a great sketch.
It's a wonderful sketch. When Del Boy and Boycey.
Yeah.
And then Boycey's been cheating.
Yes.
And then Del turns it over to
me. Where are you going?
He went, I didn't know you had four aces. And he went, I didn't know you had four kings. He went,
That wasn't the end I dealt you.
Wasn't the end I dealt you. One of the classic sketches. But no, listen, he's won one. And listen, he's a lad from Essex.
That's incredible.
University
21.
Dropout. 1.2 million pounds he's won. And I mean, listen, that, when he gets back to Essex from Vegas,
yeah,
that is a lot of spray tans.
Love sports.
Switching from cricket to golf.
Cricket to golf.
You played
last week, didn't you?
I did play last week. Played all right. In fact, tied it on the 18th.
What did you play off?
Oh, these little wooden things. Put the ball on top of it. No, listen, I'm not going to say my handicap because it's quite rubbish.
Okay.
In fact, a lot of our mates are listening.
Right.
A lot of our mates listen to this show.
They do.
So I'm going to say...
Mine don't.
I'm going to say I played off of 17.
Right.
Right? Now let's see what reaction I get.
Yes.
To that.
Right.
And a couple of the boys joined in, the five handicappers and the six handicappers. But off my points, half the game on the 18th. I should have won it on the 16th. I went a little bit wally-ish. Started hitting the ball into the trees.
Keep going into your character.
I do. But listen, we do love the golf, and it's a strange one. Obviously, it's played in Ireland. This time around, and we've sort of had such a good little run in the past few. I mean, we talked about Tiger Woods with one of the greatest comebacks in a sporting comeback.
Until Sunday.
Well, yeah, I would still say that Tiger Woods is one of the greatest comebacks ever. You know,
as a person,
fused his back. His back was fused. How can he come back and win a sort of a major? It's just amazing. But I do think that the greatest sporting end was at the weekend with the cricket. Slightly different to Tiger. We're joined now by Matt Cooper, golf writer, ahead of the Open. Morning, Matt.
Morning, how you doing?
Very well, thank you, Matt. It's nearly afternoon now, isn't it?
Yeah. It takes a while for Johnny to understand what the difference between the morning and the afternoon is.
Yes.
Listen, so he's played in Ireland this time. What about this? It's an odd choice to give Darren Clark the opening tee shot.
Yeah, I'm actually over in Portrush. I've just been at the Tiger Woods press conference, actually.
Have you? What do you say?
Yes. Very interesting stuff, actually. Given what you were just saying about his comeback and everything, he was explaining that the Open gives him the best chance, probably, of adding to his major total. Obviously, he loves Augusta, but the other two majors tend to be set up for very much just the distance, whereas he's like saying that at the Open, you can run the ball along the ground, and that's why Tom Watson 10 years ago very nearly won an Open. Greg Norman's contended as a veteran. So I think he's quite excited. He really, really loves links golf. You can just see in his eyes that he gets quite excited about it. And he also said that when he contended in this tournament last year, that was really the precursor to everything that went afterwards, winning the Tour Championship with those amazing scenes and then winning the Masters in April. So he's happy to be back here.
So, it like you say, it's going to bring some of the older players into the sort of the fray of it because, you know, like we say, some of the other courses, it's just geared up for big hitters and, you know, tiny greens and stuff like that. But this allows it a little bit more open.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he also made a very good point that this course is returning to the open rota for the first time since 1951. And there is something a little bit different to this course, to the Scottish and English rota courses, that the greens are quite raised. Some of them have got runoffs at the front. The grass is very short around those greens, and a lot of the players are practicing putting from off the greens rather than chip shots.
That's a bit of me. That's a bit of me, Matt. That's the worst for me. That's why I sort of half gave up goal. I just can't chip around the green, so I tend to putt from about a mile away.
Matt, I'm sorry, Matt. Rory McIlroy is preparing to. He's going to tee off for probably the biggest tournament of his life. His first major. In his native Northern Ireland, I mean, can he bring it home?
Man, I hope so. If he was to bring this home, this town, which already, by the way, is rocking. I mean, the crowds that have been here for the practice days have been insane. I was talking to a guy who runs one of the shops in the Tented Village, and they took 46,000 on the Sunday before the Open last year, and they went up 164,000 this year.
Wow! So I could take it if he wins it, there'll be an Open top bus for him.
An Open top bus.
there's a famous bar in Port Rush, the Harbour Bar, and last night the atmosphere in there was just absolutely sensational.
Wow.
I think it's gonna stay that way. And if Rory or one of the other Irish guys does well, the place is gonna be rocking.
Yeah.
You just hope at the very least that one of them contends, because it will just make this place very special. Can Rory do it? Well, one thing we do know is that he's the course record holder here. When he was a 16-year-old, he birdied the final five holes to shoot 60. Was it 60 or 61? I can't remember quite off the top of my head. But, he did that. He knew he was on to get the course record, which at the time was 64, and he just wanted to beat it, and he actually went and thrashed it. The course is slightly different now. There's two different holes and a few tweaks. But what that shows us is that, he's not going to be scared of this challenge. The only real thing is it's 5 years now since Rory's won a major championship, and that's kind of like it's quite a shadow that's hanging over him. And I suppose the big question is this added pressure to that shadow, or is this the circumstance that's going to enable him to escape it in sort of sensational style?
What's his putting like at the moment?
I think it's okay. I think the biggest thing with him is that he seems to be going with quite a conservative policy. So he's one of the players who have noted that this is not a golf course where you can take your driver out and thrash it all the time. So it will actually make for quite an interesting performance from Brooks Koepka, who has actually used that. He's hit driver a lot when he's won his four majors in the last nine starts. Here he could do that, but he'd have to be spectacularly fortunate or utterly brilliant to avoid all the trouble. So Rory's thinking of hitting a lot of two irons, and that might, in a way, sort of, it's weird. His greatest strength is driving the ball, but it kind of might lead to him playing a more sort of steady game that ultimately will help him out. The only big worry with Rory is if it gets windy, he's never been the greatest player in the world in wind, because he has a very high ball flight. But at the moment, it's not predicted to be windy.
I was going to say, I mean, they've produced, Northern Ireland have produced some amazing golfers, really, over the years. It's, you've also got Graham McDowell, Darren Clark. How do they produce so many golfers from there?
Well, I don't know, but here's the stranger thing. There've only been four major championship winners from Northern Ireland. The first was Fred Daly back in 60, 70 years ago. He was a caddy at Royal Port Rush. Graham McDowell is from Port Rush itself. Darren Clark moved to Port Rush in his 20s and was a member of the club. And, of course, Rory's got his course record here. So it's not just Northern Ireland that's got all these things. It's literally this town is like the hotbed of what has arisen. One of the reasons that's the case is Portrush has two courses, and it seems everybody in the town plays golf and loves golf. So there's a real sort of...
Is there nothing else to do there, Matt? Is that the end of it? What should we do today? We go down the pub. No, let's play golf. There's no pub here.
If I was to do a big sell for Portrush, it has got some absolutely outstanding beaches, and so has Port Stewart. The beaches here are unbelievable, and people are out swimming in them at the moment. That's how beautiful it is. There's loads of cut arcades and all that sort of stuff. So, there's a bit more. But I tell you what is the big thing. It's a bit like when you're in Scotland. It doesn't matter what class you are, what background, you get the opportunity to play the golf here. There's none of the sort of snuttiness you get with Southern England. Yeah. So everybody gets the opportunity of playing it, and it's very much a game of the people.
Well, listen, we're looking forward to it. And I know it's such a... I toured there... on a rock tour a couple of years, in fact, about 18 months ago, and it is an amazing, amazing area to be in. You're right, some of the beaches are stunning. And one thing, if you do get time, Matt, if you do get time, and you can nip down back, get to Belfast, there's a mad place there called Filthy McNasties. You've got to get to it's world famous. Filthy McNasties in Belfast. Yeah. If the golf gets boring, get down there, you'll love it.
Okay.
Matt, have a wonderful time.
Enjoy the golf, Matt.
No doubt.
I will do. Thanks a lot.
No doubt.
We'll how warm is it there, by the way?
At this very moment, it's very warm. I'm in the sun, and I'm probably catching the sun a little bit.
Yeah.
But the rain's going to start tomorrow, and we're just kind of hoping there's not too much of it.
Wow.
Go and get in the sea now. Have a little
16 factor on.
Yeah, there you go.
Cheers, Matt.
Matt Cooper there, golf writer. Yeah, honestly, that bar, Filthy McNasties in Belfast. They have a live band.
Filthy McNasties.
I got it wrong. I was talking to someone away on a skiing trip, and I said, I went to Filthy McStinkies. And they went, you meant Filthy McNasties.
Love sports.
As I said yesterday, he's a bit of a steward for me on the bit of a steward's inquiry on whether, you know, there's needed all that much money. It was actually there was this black activist in 1969, and he was
gave a great speech.
Brilliant. What a speech he gave. Yeah. And it was absolutely, he was spot on, you know. Let's worry about the planet. Let's feed the children that are starving. So, not about worrying about sending people out to the space, spending billions. It was billions in those days, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, you imagine what it is now.
Yeah.
What they do to it.
Yeah, but we don't, in fact, it's a good question, actually, as to why we don't sort of walk on the moon anymore. It's not, you know, apart from when the police and Sting sang Walking on the Moon. We're joined now by Keith Cooper, editor of Astronomy Now. Good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, Keith, now listen, it's 50 years since the moon landings. I mean, should we be doing it again?
I think so. I just caught your conversation there about the cost.
Yes.
I mean, it does cost a lot of money, and I think, you know, the American government sort of asked NASA to send astronauts back to the moon by the end of 2024, and they're estimating $30 to $40 billion. And sure, that's a lot of money, but I try to see it more in terms of worth than cost.
Yeah.
You know, the benefits that we could get out of it, I think, are worth it.
Tell me the benefits.
Well, there's, you know, there's sort of more obvious benefits in terms of technology. A lot of the technology that was, you know, developed or invented for the Apollo missions was filtered down into everyday use. You know, things like heart monitors and medical equipment, water filters that keep water clean, even things like, you know, the technology they used in the spacesuits is now being employed in firefighting suits, or even in sports shoes, you know, because I developed the moon.
Just one more thing, Keith, quickly before Bell's got something to ask you. Is there a chance that in about 30 years I can get a holiday, if I'm still here, if I can get a holiday to the moon for 2 weeks?
If you're rich.
Okay, really?
If you're very rich. I mean, I think tourism, you know, if we do go back to the moon and we have a base there or whatever, it's a big if, but I think, you know...
He needs a swimming pool. If I have a swimming pool, I'm not going if it's no swimming pool.
Well, you know, if you're really rich, there's been billionaires that have gone on sort of space tourism visits to the space station.
Right.
So, yeah, I can... Yeah.
Is it the fact, though, that we've not sort of walked on the moon again? Is it the fact that once we went there, we went... It's a bit like going to Milton Keynes. Once you've been there, you go, it's pretty boring, isn't it? Right, there's nothing to see.
Cut the roundabouts.
You know, and is that it? We
I was Mr. Milton Keynes, by the way.
You was. But is it the fact that we went to the moon and we got what we needed? We took a bit of dust off the floor and a couple of rocks. And
we took a giant leap.
There's not a lot here.
Well, I think, you know, I think they stopped going in, you know, the early 70s, partly because they couldn't afford it. They had the Vietnam War to fight. And that was sucking up all the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, there wasn't the political will. I mean, some of the politicians probably thought exactly the same. You know, it's a big old grey rock. We've been a few times. What's the point in going again? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when Apollo, you know, went in the late 60s, you know, the 60s was a bad time in the United States. You know, you had JFK being assassinated, Martin Luther King being assassinated, Vietnam War. There was civil unrest. And it just gave, you know, something that everybody could believe in, that just 10 years earlier, it was thought impossible. No one's ever going to be able to go to the moon. And yet they did it, and everybody got behind it.
Yeah.
Look at the world today, and, you know, it's pretty crummy, really. You know, there's lots of problems, and I, you know,
lots of rocks on there, and there's lots of rocks.
Yeah, but
what about what's next, though? I mean, obviously, we keep talking about Mars, but if you leave now, you're not going to land there for 30 years or something. What's next?
Yeah.
Well, I think the moon is next. It's, you know, we've been there before, so we kind of know how to do it. Although we've lost a lot of the expertise because, you know, everybody's retired now. The people who did it before. But it's the nearest place. Elon Musk at SpaceX, he wants to go to Mars. He wants to go himself.
Is he going to go in one of his cars?
He sent one of his cars into space.
Did he?
Tesla.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tesla.
It ended up flying past Mars.
Hey, Keith, am I right in saying that millions of years ago, there was actually, I mean, like as David Bowie said, there was actually life on Mars and kind of like it is here?
Oh, well, that's a million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
We don't know. I mean, billions of years ago, we know there was water on Mars.
That's right, yeah.
As far as, you know, we need water for life.
Yes.
And it's possible, you know, maybe a big comet or asteroid smacked into Mars and, you know, sent some rocks into space, and these rocks could have contained, you know, bacteria and microbes. And
they should do that in Milton Keynes.
They should do that in Milton Keynes, yeah.
Yeah.
Keith, is there research coming out now trying to get people to live on the moon? I mean, who'd want to do that?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't. I don't even like flying. So no way
you wouldn't get me up with one of those either, I'll tell you. Those rockets, yeah, they look scary.
In fact, those people, you know, who want to climb Everest.
Yeah.
You know, they do it because it's there. And I imagine
that's
tons
true.
Of people
that's
who want
true.
To go on the moon.
That's true.
You know, it's nothing else, just get away from us. I mean,
Keith,
I don't think I've been to Milton Keynes before, but the way you describe it sounds like
don't go. Just another roundabouts.
Keith, I find it quite amazing that you're editor of the Astronomy Now and you don't like flying.
I like to stay on the ground.
Do you know, just on that aspect, do you think that like John said, sort of people probably won't have 2 week holidays, but you know, I know Branson's tried this, and it's, you know, that you can sort of just come out of the atmosphere, or you can get flights just out of the atmosphere and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it will become affordable in the coming years?
I don't know. It depends what you call affordable. I mean, you know, you or me. I don't know how much money you have, but I think, you know, the average person probably wouldn't be able to do it.
No.
Certainly not, you know, in the next couple of decades.
Will it be cheaper than going to Marbella or Saint-Tropez?
No.
Well, I'll tell you what, yeah. Keith, if Total Recall's anything to go by, you got to go to Mars, and I don't like the look of that. Women with three boobs and all that going on.
No,
I don't fancy Mars.
To be fair, I've seen some people in Essex like that. Keith, thanks ever so much for your time. Keith Cooper there, editor of Astronomy Now.
Cheers, Keith.
It's a funny one, though. Okay, let's just say this, right? Okay. Branson phones up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he says...
From his island,
Necker Island. Mm. And says... Actually, I've been listening to that Balance Burnley show. I like them.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay for them to go to the moon.
Mm. Right? And sponsor us.
They're going to go.
That'd be a good idea.
They're going to go Friday.
Yeah.
Would you do it?
No.
No?
Absolutely not, mate.
Would you go Monday?
Yeah. No. I'll be honest with you. Anything, I tell you what, I wouldn't. There's quite a few things I wouldn't do. You wouldn't get me up in a private jet. Not if it was the.
Why?
No.
Private jet's great.
No, Buddy Ollie. No, thank you very much.
You're talking about a light aircraft.
Nah, don't want it.
I'm talking...
Oh, no, hang on. Private jet's wrong, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking light aircraft.
Yeah.
The ones that go from Stapleford and... Nah.
Got a propeller.
Nah. Our mate Jeff Calvert.
You've been in private jet, haven't you?
No.
No?
Never.
What's
I know you have.
What's the matter with you?
The light aircrafts, you know, people who've got their own plane. Yeah. Why don't you come in with me one of the weekend and I'm flying up a stable? No chance, mate.
No.
You won't get me up in one of those.
A helicopter?
No.
You've been in a helicopter?
No.
Really?
No. Don't like them.
Wow.
You have?
I've been a few, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, in saying that, I don't want to go again.
There you go.
I think.
Why
I've,
not?
I've been...
Oh, no.
Yeah, I've probably been in four or five, but...
They're not enjoyable, are they?
My cousin my cousin Stephen, got involved in a helicopter and jet business.
Yes.
Strangely enough, with Jensen Button's manager.
Right, okay.
And they had this sort of private jet business, and I went down to see him one day and said, oh, we've got this new helicopter. Do you want to go up in it? And I said, well, I've never, I'm not a pilot. I can't fly it. And they said, no, we'll take you up in it. And we went up from Southend Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really windy day. And they said, but listen, we'll fly out of, I think it was OC Island. And and I was in the back, and I had my fingernails digging at the side because we were flying sideways.
No.
Right? Because it was windy.
Don't fancy that.
It was really windy.
Yeah.
And the pilot and my cousin were in the front of it.
Yeah.
And they were laughing. Laughing at me as if to go, oh, look at him, he's so worried.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was saying, what? What's happening? It was like, it was shaking.
Oh,
and they actually come on the, you know, the little earpiece and said, actually, we're going to turn back. It is a bit windy. And we turn back. Land. I was never been so pleased to get on the ground floor.
Yeah.
And on the ground floor, right? And I got out the helicopter and he went...
Oh, not the second floor,
not the second floor.
No.
And he said, was you a bit nervous? I said, no, I was fine. And they were laughing at me.
Yeah.
The pilot and my cousin.
Meanwhile, your trousers had turned brown.
They had turned brown. 6 months later...
Yes.
That pilot... flew into a mountain in Scotland.
Wow.
Dead.
What a good job you won on that one.
Exactly. And it's do you know what? It always
that's frightening, isn't it,
played on my
that?
Mind that he was so confident as a pilot that he was laughing at me as if to say, oh, listen, don't worry about the wind. And he flew into a mountain.
Well, yeah.
Now, you know, if he can't steer the thing, how was I going to do?
That's what that absolutely underlines what I said before. I don't want to get in one. Tell me something, on a lighter subject.
Mm.
Would you like a Greg's drive-thru?
Greg's drive-thru?
Greg's drive-thru.
Not because I'm trying to stay off of
no,
carbs.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. If it wasn't on one of your silly diets.
Yeah, so what... why Greg's, though? There's other things I could probably choose as a drive-thru.
In Newcastle, they've got the first Greg's drive-thru. And let me tell you this, my friend.
Mm.
Let me tell you this. It will be the last.
This is Love Sport.
You've been listening to Bell and Sperling. We will sign out. Thank you very much.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.